Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Again, I have no idea if this is soft rock or not, Frank Shires, but I'm going to defer to you. Is this, what is this?
This is Peg, Steely Dan. Sure it is.
I don't know, Frank. Anyway, Frank, I'll tell you this.
Can't win, Frank. You just can't pick the right one, Dad.
Yeah, that's it, you know. Jack, what? You need to send us a list.
Well, if you started the show with player or something like that, I think I would have been a little bit more inclined. Well, let me do this. Let me tease the recap. We're going to be talking about mayors and leaders and what I think makes a very good leader. But before we get to that, Frank Shires,
yes, sir.
Have you heard about this gasoline shortage, Frank? Because I was reading about Reuters. Like, apparently some states are releasing notifications for people to not fill plastic bags with gasoline. Have you read this?
Yes. Because, after all, that just makes a lot of sense.
It's like people, and then somebody else said underneath that they saw somebody at a gas station who was filling up those huge blue bins with gasoline, like the storage bins that you put, like you take all grandma's clothes and you put them in, and then you put them in the attic. And I was thinking, what world are we living in where the second that somebody says, hey, gasoline, or hey, toilet paper, all of a sudden everybody loses their minds and goes out and just hoards this stuff? We live in a world of paranoid people, Frank Shires. And speaking of paranoid, you're going to be leaving us, Frank. I just wanted to announce this so everybody knows that Frank Shires is retiring on Friday. And every night at 8:30, we celebrate the life and the legacy of Frank Shires in a probably not the best named segment, Remembering Frank Shires, a salute to Frank Shires, parentheses 2021, where we ask Frank questions. And if you can't find it, if you can't listen to it the night of, what you can do is you can find us on Apple Podcasts and also Spotify. So you can hear the legacy and the myth and the legend that is Frank Shires. Frank, tonight we're going to be asking you about your best show, your worst show, best guest, worst guest. It's going to be a hoot and a holler. But before we get to all that, Shane, let's get right into the recap.
Sounds good.
Jack's recap. Today's biggest headlines in 15 minutes or less.
I've been thinking a lot about what makes a good leader. I've been thinking a lot about what it means to lead, whether it's a coach or it's a governor or it's a mayor or whatever it is, because Art Langley just jumped into the mayoral race. As a matter of fact, yesterday Frank and I were kind of joking about how many people are actually involved in the race for mayor in the city of Seattle. It's kind of a joke at this point in time. There's like 24 people who are all kind of vying for this position. And they're all coming at it from different angles, saying, oh, well, this person's unqualified, and this person's unqualified, and I'm all for universal health care, I'm all for universal basic income, or whatever it is, right? All these people throw out all of these ideas over and over and over again. I'll tell you what I rarely hear, though. Like, I don't really hear the language of kind of the common guy. I don't really hear the language of kind of the common individual. I hear a lot of language centered around, like, we're going to come back and we're going to clean up the state of Washington by guaranteeing people universal basic income. We will become the most progressive city in the union. And after we do that, we're going to ensure that everybody gets a free Pomeranian. And after you get your free Pomeranian, we're going to guarantee that that Pomeranian gets health care. And not only does it get health care, it's also going to get little mittens for when it snows. Knows because Pomeranians have very thin feet, and their feet get cold when it snows, and we can't have our Pomeranians walking around in cold weather because then they would be miserable. And you know what else I'm going to do as mayor? I'm going to clean up these streets for the Pomeranians. Thank you ever so much. I'm the mayor of Seattle. I'm so tired of this. You know, I'm so tired of politicians. I'm tired of the language of politicians. I'm tired of the rhetoric of politicians. I don't need a salesman. I need somebody to do the job. The job. A mayor, in a way, is kind of simultaneously the dad or the mom of a city, but they're also kind of like the business leader of a city. I don't need a social figure. I don't need somebody to go up there and say, this is what we're going to do for this disenfranchised group or that disenfranchised group. It does not matter to me. I need someone who is actually going to go up there and say, well, this is the budget that we're working with, and these are the potholes that we need to fill, and these are the homeless people that we need to move out of the camps. That's it. That's it. You know, everybody likes to come down on President Trump for being kind of a simpleton in his language. Everybody likes to come down on former President Trump, and they would say, oh, well, he speaks at a fifth grade reading level. Oh, well, he addresses people like he's 12 years old. I'll tell you this, people resonate to that. People gravitate towards that. People, in many ways, like that. They like being spoken to as if you are just talking to them. That's kind of a tautology, but people just like to be spoken to like they're a normal human being. We've gotten way off the rails in this like heady political nonsense, this kind of show theater in politics now, where we are susceptible to people simply because they come in and they promise us a lot of stuff. Or because they have this utopian version of what the city should look like. You know what I want? I want this out of a mayor. I want somebody who can come in, and I don't need massive sweeping reforms. I don't need someone who's going to shake up the system. I don't need someone to talk about universal basic income. What I need from somebody is to say this. We all share this city. Whether you have a business or whether you're a homeless individual or whether you're a corporation, whatever it is, we all share this city. Whether you're an Uber driver or a pizza delivery guy or you're a stay-at-home mom. And so what I'm going to do is I am going to organize this city to the best of my ability in such a way that everybody gets fair treatment within the city limits. What does that look like? Well, it looks like fixing transit or filling potholes or making sure that homeless people aren't shooting up dope in front of a Starbucks. That's basically it. It's really boring. It's really boring 1950s healthy police department, healthy relationship with the homeless population where you don't allow them to camp out in front of schools. You show up, maybe you cut a couple ribbons, kiss a couple babies, and that's basically it. If you are a salesman, what do? Well, you come out and you promise people the world. You promise people mittens for their Pomeranians, and you go around talking about how you're going to give everybody free money, and you're going to ensure that everybody in the county has a house, and you're going to come out and you're going to buy a couple of hotels and say, well, not only is this a great investment, but we're also going to be helping the homeless population. This is the issue with politicians now. We have salesmen who come to you and say, I'm taking your taxpayer dollars and I'm going to reinvest them into the community. And won't you like that so very much? I mean, take a look around. You know, take a look around. Whenever I look at the Seattle subreddit, the Seattle, Washington subreddit, mind you, what I see is thousands of people who now have to basically negotiate with their living circumstance in the city of Seattle. They have to negotiate where they go, what time they go places, how to avoid traffic, what parks to avoid, where to take their kids on the weekends, where to not take their kids on the weekends. They have to negotiate with basically a city that is rotting from the inside out. So when I hear, again, mayoral candidates coming out and they are feeding me a line about how they're going to come in and do all these sweeping reforms and we're going to make sure that this disenfranchised indigenous group gets this kind of representation at this level, it's like, okay, well, what does that do for the stay-at-home mom who's got a pothole in front of her house? Or what does that do for the guy that owns a tree-trimming business that needs to get his permits? Or like, what does that do for the business owner downtown who can't open up her business before 8 a.m. because she's got a homeless guy sleeping in front of her business? Like, what is that really doing for the people on the ground? I really want to encourage people that when it does come time to vote for somebody, that you don't allow yourself to kind of get hypnotized by the sales pitch. You don't allow yourself to get kind of drawn in to the sales pitch. And I'm mostly talking to people out there who are in like Sawant's district or something like that. I'm mostly talking to people out there that allow themselves to be swept up in the kind of nice, flowery rhetoric of someone like Sawant. or someone like Gonzalez or whatever, right? These people get so swept up in such flowery, pretty language, and then they wonder why their city, effectively, is rotting from the inside out. And then who do they blame, right? They go, oh, well, we have to tax the rich to pay for it. Well, that's all these evil, nasty business owners out there. We have to tax them much, much, much more in order to fix all these problems. You know, you can only take so much away from people, and you can only create so many circumstances for people before they just decide they've had enough of it. I get text messages on a nightly basis, 98973 State Roofing text line, and they say to me, Jack, you got to move out to the suburbs. You got to get out of there. You can't be in there. You got to go out to the suburbs. You got to come move somewhere. I'm planning actually on moving next to Frank Shires. I'm going to move to Bellevue, and I'm going to get the house right next to Frank's. But more importantly, you don't want that for a city. You don't want that to be the atmosphere. You want people to say, oh, yeah, no, live downtown. It's great. It's really healthy. It's really vibrant. You want people to be able to say, yeah, go to this park on the weekend or go here on the weekend. Do this in the city. I was talking to John Curley, what was it, last week, and he says, well, we don't go here after 10 p.m. and we don't do this after this time. I mean, again, you're effectively negotiating with your own city. What kind of scenario is that? So speaking of mayoral candidates, Art Langley, he's the grandson of the former governor, and he has finally joined the list of Seattle mayoral candidates. Here's a little clip from him on G and Ursula this morning, talking about the last, let's say, 15 years or so of the mayorship of Seattle. Here's what that sounded like.
Well, I think we've had a lot of folks that have entered these races over the last 15 years or so that really have not had a ton of experience working in the business world or you know, on the ground in Seattle in general, outside of the political world. And I think that we need more of that from folks that have worked in business and philanthropy and other things that aren't necessarily political from the get-go.
So he goes on to talk about how he has seen homelessness addressed in the city of Seattle, and here's what that sounded like.
Well, there's been a kind of a mishmash of efforts, I think, by a whole lot of different groups that are involved and are all well-intentioned. And I think some of them have been very effective, some of them maybe not as much, but we don't really know that because we don't have a great list of who's done what. I, having worked with the Salvation Army for the last 20 years, or actually most of my life, but I've been on the board for the last 20 years, I can speak more knowledgeably about what they've been doing. And we have a couple of great programs that we've been using. And in fact, I assisted in opening up a shelter in January, the newest one down in SoTo, which is housing 330 people now.
Okay, let me just say this. Art Langley is boring. Okay, this is a boring speaker, but this is exactly what I want. I want a boring individual who's talking about philanthropy. I want a boring individual to come in and say, well, I've been working with the Salvation Army. I want a boring mayor. I want a run-of-the-mill, boring individual to come in and say, well, we gotta come around, we gotta, you know, fix this budget. And then we got to, you know, try to do this with the homeless population. I want that guy. I want that guy. I don't want this big speech-making nonsense. I don't want this big flowery language. Now, I'm not necessarily endorsing the guy. But what I am saying is that you have to go against what your initial draw is. It's almost like having a really like a bad habit of dating like a really bad boyfriend or a really bad girlfriend. You have to do the opposite of what you want. You have to go against your initial pull or desire to be attracted to somebody simply because the way that they talk, simply because of the things that they are promising you. I want a boring, run-of-the-mill, hey, we got potholes, we got a budget, we got to fix these electrical lines, we got to fix the transit. I want somebody who is as white bread, milk toast as you could possibly get. Because for a city the size of Seattle, that's basically what you need. For as multicultural and as beautiful as Seattle is, you need a boring, run-of-the-mill, hey, everybody, we've got this amount of money to spend, we have this many expenditures, and we have to do this for SPD, and we have to do this for our parks. It's all boring. That is what you want. What you don't want, for example, let me just give you an example, okay? There's another story over at My Northwest talking about how the city council is clashing over a strategy for SPD layoffs. And they are going back and forth over the Brady list, which is kept by prosecutors so that they can avoid having officers with a history of dishonesty, sloppy investigative work, or biased testimony under oath. You have basically this huge Gordian knot of legalese as to how we're supposed to quote-unquote lay off 35 officers from SPD, right? It's basically nonsense. And they're bickering, and they're going back and forth. And finally, Sawant decides to chime in, and she says, well, do council members remember saying that they support defunding the police by 50% last summer? Then, do council members remember saying they cannot defund by 50% in 2020 because reducing the number of police officers would take up to 4 months, but they promised to do so in 2021? It's like, Jesus, you guys. You're here to run a city. You're here to do a boring job. You are not here to stand on a soapbox and try to convince people that your socialist leanings or your capitalist leanings or your whatever it is, your Labor Party leanings, I don't care what it is. You're not here to give us this big activist speech. You're here to do the down and dirty, boring stuff. Down and dirty, boring stuff. So my plea to you this evening is, for the opening of the show, that whether it is somebody who is running for governor or whether it's somebody who's running for mayor or running for the city council, whatever it is, you might get a huge charge out of somebody coming in with a big old speech about how we're going to clean up this city. You might get a huge emotional rush. You might feel butterflies in your stomach and think to yourself, man, this individual is really going to turn the city around. You have to go against that, and you have to find the most boring individual that you can possibly find on the list. I'm telling you, it works every single time. You have to find the most boring, uninteresting, the person who's basically putting you to sleep, because that person is not a salesman. That person is there to do the job. I guarantee it. I guarantee it. That person has not spent time practicing their speaking cadence. They've not practiced their talking points. They're just there. They're just there to say, yeah, I got a city to run. I gotta get the Salvation Army involved. And, you know, maybe we'll try to, we got to balance the budget and, you know, got this list of expenditures and we'll go over the 2021 budget. As much as you might hate that and think that that person is not fit for the position, listen to Jack Stein right now. That is the perfect person for the position. And speaking of perfect person for the position, Rachel Bell is going to come up and we're going to be talking about Oregon Trail and the secret to beating a 40-year-old video game. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this. Happy Soft Rock Wednesday, Rachel Bell. Rachel Bell is on the line. As you know, Rachel Bell, this is our own little holiday in the middle of the week where we like to celebrate the magic and wonder of soft rock and everything that comes with soft rock love, meaning a love of Kenny G. And I don't know any other
Kenny
soft.
G is not soft rock. That is smooth jazz. I dealt with this with Aaron Mason. You got to get your category straight.
Okay, so
man.
Rachel Bell, you wanted to talk about Oregon Trail, which is you will be my proverbial Virgil as we descend the nine circles of hell known as Oregon Trail. Please lead us down this path, Rachel Bell.
Okay, so Oregon Trail was the game of my generation. If you were a kid in school in the 80s or 90s, this was this educational computer game that you got to play, which was super cool because if you were playing a computer game, that meant you weren't doing math, which I hated. So this game was invented in the mid 70s by these teachers in training. They were still like teachers to be, I don't know, in teacher school or whatever. And they made it up as a card game, and then it ended up becoming a computer game. And then it ended up becoming a huge hit that they didn't expect. And they made made a lot of money after off of it. So if you've never played in your generation, basically when you play, you are a settler. You're in a covered wagon and you're making the journey from Missouri to Oregon. You are reliving these real life events that happened in 1948. But the problem is, which we're going to get to in a minute, is these were not exactly real life events. So the game is being re-released, or rather it was re-released in April by a company called Gameloft for Apple Arcade. And they're targeting people my age. It says now 40-year-old original fans and their kids. But the problem is that there were historical inaccuracies and a lot of cliches about Native American culture because these settlers were encountering Native Americans along the way in this game. So the people who redid the game decided to bring in three indigenous historians so they could say, basically, is this racist or is this not racist? Like, let's just say it how it is. So here are some examples of the things that they looked at and what they changed. So number one, they had them listen to the music they were planning to use for the game. And they said, this cracks me up, back off on the drums and flutes. That apparently is not accurate.
Yeah.
Completely. And then they said, don't have the Native American characters using broken, stilted English. One of the experts said, quote, it's a trope to make Native American people seem primitive somehow, when actually in 1948, there were a lot of bilingual or polylingual Native Americans at that time. Because at that time, you know, they'd actually taken on a lot of the modern day devices that settlers were using. Like, they actually had guns. So that brings us to our next point, which is bows and arrows. So the creator of this game included bows and arrows. He said because he thought they were super cool and reminded him of, you know, movies from the 80s. But one of these historians, University of Nebraska historian Margaret Hudel, she researched old photos and drawings. And so she could see like the clothes they were wearing and what they used. So she said no bows and arrows because they were trappers at that time and they would have most likely had a rifle. So the bow and arrow was an outdated stereotype. And she also said not everybody had braids. Take the braids away as well. Because of course, just like in any culture, like fashion and, you know, technology changes over time. And then David Lewis, who teaches anthropology and ethnic studies at Oregon State University, who's also a tribal member, just wanted to point out that the Oregon Trail, quote, was not a positive story for Native Americans. He said the settlers kept coming. The government forced tribes into bad deals, treaties that gave away their best land and forced their people onto reservations where many died. The settlement of Oregon was initially just a theft of land. By and large, the experience of Native people was one of continuous loss for the first 70 or 80 years. So I haven't played this new game. I don't remember enough about the old game to know what happens. But I think, you know, they want to make it clear that even though this is a fun game, and even if you die of dysentery, you're still going to have a good time, that it's important to kind of point out that this wasn't fun for all the people involved.
I have two complicated thoughts about this, Rachel Bell. The first and one, I'll tell you how to beat Oregon Trail every single time. But then the first one is,
oh, is this like Nintendo? Like left, right, up, down, up, down?
Kind of. There was a flaw built into the game that was easy to exploit. But it basically goes like this. The first thing that I noticed about the way that we have portrayed Native American people for far too long is basically like really rapey cavemen. Have you ever noticed that in, let's say, the Searchers or any of those old John Ford, John Huston movies? They are basically leches. They are disgusting human beings who are constantly after the white woman. And I think to myself, how did that paint racism in the United States in the 1940s and the 1950s? If you think about it, it was basically coming from all angles. And it was as if, unless you were a white man who was built similarly to John Wayne, you were evil and disgusting and sex crazed and all this kind of stuff. And even now, when I look back and I watch, for example, The Searchers, which is something that I watched recently, I think to myself, man, this makes me uncomfortable, the way that they portray these people in this culture. But then two, and also I'm glad, I have to say this, I'm glad that they went back and they decided to redo the game to actually have it be historically accurate. I know that people like to come down against SJWs for changing history and they're changing our culture or whatever people like to say. But if you're going to go back and fix anything, I imagine one of the things you would want to fix is horrible, awful stereotypes about an entire group of people. Now, with that being said, Rachel Bell, number two, if you want to beat Oregon Trail every single time, you have to start out as the banker. Everybody knows this. Then you have the most amount of...
I don't.
You don't...
If everybody knew, why are you telling us this tired old tip?
You have to start as the banker, and then you have... You start with something like 5,000 USD, and then you buy all the stuff that you need in mass, because remember, according to Oregon Trail, one is none, and two is one. That was one of the tips they gave you in one of the loading screens. So then when you end up crossing one of the rivers in Oregon Trail, or you have to kill a rattlesnake or something like that, if you lose something, then you have enough grain to feed everybody, you have enough cattle. Sarah and I have gone, we've had hour-long conversations about the best way to beat Oregon Trail to this day. You always start out as the banker, Rachel Bell.
I don't even remember that there was a banker. So God bless you, too, that you could still talk about this. You found the right person.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, for anybody who's rolling their eyes and saying, oh, just another, thing from the past that's getting woke now, I don't think that this is in the same category as, taking a book that was written in the 1800s, because this was designed as an educational tool. It wasn't designed as a piece of fiction. And the guys that created it were teachers who felt like that story hadn't been taught to kids before, and they wanted to teach it to them in a way that was palatable and fun. So it's kind of surprising to me that even in the 80s, they portrayed it that way, since they really were trying to make it as a learning tool. It seems like they must have known better even then. But then again, in the 80s, when I was in elementary school, that's when you were still learning the Christopher Columbus story of how he came, and oh, what a lovely thing he did here in America. So I guess, it took a little bit longer to get the facts. But yeah, I don't think this is a case of going woke. This is just a situation where you're showing respect to like a big part of our population who's really suffered because we took their land away and then gave them government cheese and made them unhealthy. It's true. It is true. I mean, fry bread, which is a big part of some Native American culture, the food, people consider that a part of a culture, but there's two ways about it. Like a lot of people will not eat fry bread because they didn't have food like that when they were free. But once they started getting government rations because their land was taken away and they didn't have any money, that's when flour and fat, in the form of oil was introduced. Like fry bread wouldn't have been something they ate if it wasn't out of poverty. So it's complicated.
Rachel Bell, once again, thank you so much for bringing food into this conversation, because you have
always
a skill and a knack for somehow taking Oregon Trail, which has nothing to do with food, and then somehow weaving it back in to everything that you know about food, Rachel Bell. Oh, and get this, I heard somebody the other day, we were talking about weird foods, and they were talking about peanut butter and pickle sandwiches, and I immediately thought of you, Rachel Bell. And on that note, Rachel Bell, we're out of time. We have to get out of here. Thank you so much for coming on Cairo Nights again, Rachel Bell. When we get back, we're going to do some good news with Frank Shires and Shane Peterson. We'll be right back after this.
And I'm crazy about you, baby, can't you see?
Hi, I'm Jack Stein from Cairo Nights, and we're giving them away all month long.
Giving what away, Jack?
Oh, man. It says here that we're giving away Cairo Radio smart speakers.
It's one a day for the month of May. Text SMART to 98973 to find out how you can enter your name in the daily drawing and stream your favorite shows at home with your brand new Cairo Radio smart speaker. Contest and rules at mynorthwest.com/win.
What'd you think of my promo, Frank Shires? Did you like that?
I was delighted with it and surprised.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So let's just say sometimes you want to get something done, you got to do it yourself. And by that, I mean that the fine people over at Imaging and Production send you a lot of text messages saying, please do this now. Otherwise, you don't get one. And you say, okay.
I understand.
So I wanted to. Yeah. Frank, as a major market media talent, sometimes you get bogged down for a couple of weeks and you don't have the time to cut together a promo or email imaging back. These are just the things that happen.
Don't have the excuse. You don't get to go on the air and whine about the fact that you don't have a promo when you don't give them the material they need to do the promo.
Whining is a
whining,
strong
yes,
word.
Yes, I think.
So, Frank, the good news story is that I read this from Jason Rantz. It's about the school district up in Olympia trying to coax parents to lie to get children the vaccine. Now, that's not the good news. What the good news is basically this. Just a little bit of a backstory. The district set up a vaccine clinic anticipating the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's authorization for children 12 to 15 to get the Pfizer vaccination. But the appointment system used by the vaccine provider's vendor did not allow students in that age range to sign up. So what did they ask the parents to do? Well, lie about their children's age. And that is not cool whatsoever. And so someone reached out to Jason Rantz. They sent him the email. And later the district came out and they said, yeah, super sorry about that. We probably shouldn't have done that. And they released a statement saying, yeah, we probably shouldn't have been that deceitful and gross. So I say that's what's so good about it, is that there were enough parents out there who got an email from the district saying, hey, will you lie about your children? And they said, no, absolutely not. And one brave mom sent the email to Jason Rantz at his show. Yep. And so Jason was able to talk about it and write this article. I think that it's so good for just the culture in society for people to call out school districts or whatever they can. So we have a much more transparent system. We have a much more transparent, whether it's government or school boards or someone in transit or something like that. Transparency is a healthy, let's just say, appendage of what government should be. So I ask you, Frank Shires.
Yes.
Has there ever been an issue where you either wrote in about it or sent an email to somebody? What was an issue in your life that you made a big stink about? Because these parents were so upset, they went out of their way to try to contact Jason Rantz. They went out of their way to try to let people know that the Olympia School District tried to make them do this. Is there anything out there where you said, I've had enough, and I'm writing a strongly worded letter?
Well, Jack, you forget that I do editorial cartoons every week. So I do four strongly worded letters every single week. And yes, there are topics.
Exactly.
There are topics that I will savage whoever for doing. I'm careful. I have a pretty gentle touch. You've seen the cartoons, but. Yeah. And in real life, in my everyday life, sure. When my daughter was starting elementary school, the Bellevue School District was using a mathematics curriculum called TURC, which basically was discovery math. We're not going to tell you why 2 + 2 = 4. We're going to let you discover it. We're not going to teach you the algorithm for how to do long division. We're going to let you discover it. And as a result, kids coming out of the Bellevue School District and actually about four or five others were scoring. Their mathematics skills were terrible. They were not ready for algebra. They were doing terribly in high school. And then they were going to college and having to take remedial mathematics. And when my daughter started, I heard about the group. I heard about the curriculum. It made me crazy. So I confronted teachers about it. I went to a curriculum meeting, a school board meeting, and with one administrator and spoke up. And in the end, the district adopted a pretty conventional, pretty normal math text. I think it was Macmillan. But the point is, we killed it. We put a stake through its heart, which was a good
thing. Good for you, Frank Shires. Way to stick it to the man. I will say this before we get out of here. There was a show in the early 90s called Soul Man with Dan Aykroyd.
Yep.
And my grandmother was so upset when it got canceled that she decided to make us all write letters to NBC to try to get it back. On that note, we have to take a really quick break. When we get back, we are going to get into 5 things that you may have missed, including my deep, dark, secret thoughts on Liz Cheney and the GOP. We'll be right back after this.